sample and held it up to Frisia. She recoiled from the contraption, mortified. He tilted his head and she shied away further, so he handed it to Isaria. He turned to Selyse and said something in Lareshi. Selyse appeared thoughtful and then bowed before running out of the room.
"What did you say to her?"
Frisia said. "I told her that you get easily chilled and asked that she bring winter gowns for you to examine. I doubt they will cover much more, but you might find something." Isaria held up the bustier.
"You want me to wear this?"
he said. "We are in Lonlaresh. A woman wears what she wants to wear." Raylan eyed the brown wrap. She smirked and then looked at Frisia.
"Come on, don't you want to try it? When will you ever be able to wear something like this in public again?" "Why would I want to?"
Frisia said. Raylan shrugged and glanced at the bustier in Isaria's hands.
"I don't know. Reskin seems to like it."
Frisia and Isaria both blushed furiously, and then Frisia turned on him.
"What about you? You can't wear that to dinner. Would you wear something like this?"
"Those are women's clothes," he said. She rolled her eyes.
"You know what I mean." Don't forget, he went to the Adonarone naked," said Raylan.
Wesson responded to the tapping at the door and again assisted Selyse in dragging a heavy basket of clothing into the suite. The young woman held up a garment that crossed over the bosom and then draped over the hips in filmy layers of pastel petals all the way to the floor. The back was open, but it had several lacy ties to keep the dress in place. Frisia still appeared uncertain until Selyse pulled out a matching shoulder wrap. She finally acquiesced, gingerly grasping the layers of fabric in shaky hands. Selyse turned to Dark Tidings and said,
"Your Majesty, would you like for me to send a mail with clothing for you and your son?"
With this last, she nodded toward Wesson.
"That will not be necessary," Reskin said. "And he is not my son. This is Journeyman Mage Wesson, in service to the Crown."
Selyse looked at Wesson in surprise and then back at Dark Tidings.
"I apologize for the misunderstanding. He is small for a man."
She turned back to the basket and tugged a small trunk from beneath the clothing. She set the trunk on the table beside a cushioned bench and snapped the lid open. Inside were numerous brushes of varying sizes and bottles, vials, and packets filled with colorful powders and creams. Selyse waved Frisia toward the bench and said,
"I do Perliana for you."
"Perliana?"
Frisia said, eyeing the assortment that looked like a portable alchemy shop.
"The face paints and powders," Isaria supplied. "Oh, I don't need—"
"Yes, you do,"
Raylan said as she shoved Frisia toward the bench.
"We are doing this, Frisia. Stop being so boring. Remember, you insisted on coming."
Tam's boots were waterlogged as he slogged through the muddy street from a dilapidated tavern toward the room he was renting above another dilapidated tavern. The storm had moved up from the south quickly, and now he was stuck in the downpour. He was suddenly struck from the side so that he tumbled into a pile of crates beside an abandoned market stall. He glanced up just in time to avoid the club that was descending toward his head. He kicked his assailant in the kneecap, using the force to push himself from the pile of broken slats. His feet slipped in the mud as he took to the alley, realizing the mistake too late. Men grabbed him from either side, but he took the first by surprise with a headbutt. The grip on his arm loosened, and Tam smashed his elbow into the man's jaw. He spun into the other man's grip and then used his body weight to push him off balance into the first. Tam was nearly pulled into the tangle when the man's foot slipped so that he smashed into the ground. Tam took off running in the other direction, but his assailants turned out to be many. Three more followed him through the vacant street. With the rain obscuring his vision, he missed the two that were coming at him from the opposite direction. He drew his sword and met the first with a slash to the abdomen. The man's entrails spilled onto the ground between Tam and the next assailant, who stood in shock over what had just happened to his comrade. Tam's blade slipped through the hesitant man's throat before he could recover, then continued down the street with three in pursuit. From behind him, he heard a short burst of whistles, and he knew that somewhere more were waiting for him. He was breathing so heavily, he felt like he was drowning in the rain. He ducked around a corner and covered his face for just a moment to catch his breath and then began running down another alley. His stomach dropped when he realized the rain had obscured the form pacing him from atop the roof. Two men stepped into the alley in front of him. He glanced back to see his three pursuers closing in on him. Suddenly, he tumbled to the ground in a tangle of netting. He was struggling to cut himself free with the sword when he was struck from behind, and all went black. Chapter 10 Isaria stood gawking at the entrance to the dining hall with Frisha, Raylan, and Nanasi. It was opulent and bright with warm yellow light radiating from mage-lit chandeliers. Round tables occupied the center of the room, draped in crimson table linens, with crystal goblets and filigreed porcelain place settings. No one was seated at the tables, though. All the women and their consorts stood in groups or gathered on the plush sofas and benches that were clumped around the room's perimeter. The women were dressed in whatever they desired, from ball gowns to sheer strips of fabric. Every man in the room was massive and built like a warrior.
"I do not understand," Nanasi whispered to Isaria. "Are there no normal men in Lungnaresh?"
Isaria said, "I believe it is the same as everywhere, but these are some of the most powerful men in Kielan. They choose the most impressive champions to accompany them to palace functions."
"Not every woman wants a warrior," said Nanasi.
Isaria looked at her knowingly.
"I've seen the way you look at our king. Can you say you would not choose him?"
Nanasi glanced around, obviously concerned that someone might overhear.
"He is different. He is more than a warrior. I would not be interested if he were nothing more than a bunch of muscles and a handsome face."
"I see," Isaria said. "So, you are judging them for their looks? You do not know these men. How do you know they are not more?"
Nanasi flushed and tugged at her layers of fabric, wishing they were not so snug. She had decided to wear the sheer gown over a calf-length skirt and blouse that looked to be made from woven ribbons. She said,
"That is not what I meant. You said that is the reason they are chosen. It does not seem like they are valued for anything else."
A sultry voice crawled up Nanasi's neck.
"Believe me,"
a woman said as she moved to join them, beckoning to her consort.
"We appreciate them for their many talents."
She purred in the man's ear as he grinned appreciatively. The man had dark hair and hazel eyes, and his sun-darkened skin was stretched tight over thick muscles, displayed openly beneath a loose, green-embroidered vest. The woman ran manicured nails over his exposed pectorals and said,
"Bainan here has amazing hands."
She met Nanasi's discomfited gaze.
"He is one of the court musicians who will be entertaining us tonight, and he is also one of the palace's top archers, a member of the royal guard."
Bainan seemed to have eyes only for the woman. He stroked her jaw and pressed his lips to her neck before mumbling in her ear,
"There is no need to brag, my dear."
"Of course there is,"
she said, fluttering her darkened lashes.
"You are amazing, and I am proud to call you mine."
"As it should be,"
he replied. He held her in a tight embrace, pressed a lingering kiss to her lips, and said,
"I must take my place, my love. Please be sure to enjoy yourself."
He held up a finger and added,
"But not too much."
She giggled and swatted his rear as he strutted toward the musicians. As she turned to them, small jewels sparkled in the light where they dangled from her auburn hair.
"You look surprised," she said.
"No,"
Nanasi said quickly and then stuttered,
"Well, yes. I mean, I have never seen people so affectionate in public."
The woman nodded knowingly.
"I spent a short time in Ashai. This is where you are from, yes? You are all very cold."
"Cold?"
Nanasi said.
"Yes,"
said the woman.
"You do not share yourselves, your true selves. You are distant. Reserved, I believe, is how you say it. The women and the men. You try to act like you are not human, as if you have no feelings and desires. We Lureshi are a passionate people. We express ourselves openly in our dress, our art, our love,"
she smiled fiendishly,
"and in war. You do not want to cross a powerful Lureshi woman."
She eyed each of them as they remained huddled near the entrance.
"I am Nayala, Matri and Arab House Tekal. Bainan is my first consort. My second consort, Halen, remains in a home to care for the male children."
Raylan pushed to the front of the group.
"You have two consorts?"
Nayala looked her up and down and then nodded approvingly. She said,
"Yes, Halen is a good father. Several have tried to claim him from me, but Bainan is a great champion and has always won him back. Together, they help to make my house strong. The strongest houses are those with the best balance.
Nayala,
said a vaguely familiar voice. It was the blonde and rather forward Matrianera Talia. She sidled up to them and said,
Do you intend to keep our guests to yourself?
Nayala's smile did not reach her eyes as she replied,
I was only introducing myself. They are curious about our ways.
Talia looked over at Isaria.
I heard a rumor that you are Lareshi.
Isaria glanced at the others and said,
My parents were Lareshi. I was born in Ashai.
As Isaria spoke, Talia's judgmental gaze roved her form. Isaria had wrapped a shawl around her torso, and her slinky skirt reached all the way to the floor. The woman pursed her lips at Isaria's modesty.
You do not carry yourself like a Lareshi,
Talia said.
Talia, it is not for you to judge her dress,
Nayala hissed. Talia ignored her as she ran a finger down Isaria's neck to tug at the shawl.
You do not own your body.
Isaria pushed the shawl away from her midsection, baring her abdomen and the sword hilt at her waist.
If you touch me again, I will show you how well I own my body.
Talia pulled her hand back, doing her best to hide her surprise.
I had forgotten that you carry a sword. Someone mentioned that you are a knight. Do you know how to use it, or is it a ceremonial position?
An eerie, deep voice rumbled through the doorway. I would wager she can wield it better than your champion, Dark Tidings said as he came to stand among the women. He towered over them, his shadowy presence in contrast to the colorful array of silks and jewels. The empty black gaze turned toward Talia, and he added, Should she challenge you for your champion? A man in a palace guard's formal uniform, presumably Talia's consort, by the concern on his face, cautiously approached but did not interrupt. Talia's voice wavered as she said,
No, of course not. What would I gain should he win?
Rezkin stepped behind Isaria and tugged the shawl from her shoulders to expose the green, lacy bustier hidden beneath. He reached around and ran a finger over her bare skin just below the torque. This, he said. Nayala's and Talia's eyes widened, and Isaria's skin reddened as everyone's attention followed a tide of whispers straight to her bosom.
Atanaro,
Nayala whispered.
It was a gift, Isaria said quickly. A gift from my king.
She turned and executed a formal curtsy toward Dark Tidings. It was awkward for her, but she would have felt ridiculous saluting in her state of dress. Do you accept the challenge? Dark Tidings said, his attention on Talia. Talia drew her gaze away from the torque, glanced at the sword, and then stared into Isaria's green eyes.
No, I do not desire the challenge,
Dark Tidings said. Although the ladies with whom I travel are all attractive, I did not choose them for their beauty. They are all capable, so you should not press them. They now had the attention of everyone in the large room. Talia shrugged, as if suddenly unconcerned.
I was only curious. Lareshi women do not usually carry swords. We have champions to do that sort of thing for us.
Isaria's painted lips pulled into a tight grin.
Then it is a good thing your champions are always near when you need them.
Talia's spine straightened, and she smiled in return.
Quite,
she said, and then walked away, her consort trailing behind her. Nayala's grin was genuine as she watched Talia's departure.
That was beautiful,
she murmured. Turning back to them, she said,
Talia almost never backs down from a challenge. Deline?
She nodded toward a laughing brunette surrounded by several friends.
We'll have drawn ahead now that Talia has lost significant ground. Be wary. She will seek to gain it back.
Isaria said,
I was not trying to become involved in your politics.
Nayala shrugged one shoulder.
She was rude, and her plan, whatever it was, backfired. She should have known better, but she's becoming desperate, I think.
Desperate for what?
Raylan said as she peered around Nayala.
The throne, of course.
Raylan looked back to her with wide eyes. She appeared thoroughly engrossed in the political drama.
What do you mean?
Nayala pursed her lips and then sighed.
I suppose there is no harm in explaining it to you. Before Queen Ariseal took the throne, Talia's family was expected to produce the next monarch. They had the greatest political support in the court, seconded only by Ariseal. and Delia's mother, Baxis, had made some profitable deals that had gained her favor with several prominent echelons.
Echelons?
Raylan said. The governors of the provinces, said Dark Tidings. Nyala blinked up at him as though she had somehow forgotten his presence.
Yes,
she drawled, looking at him suspiciously.
Ericiel knew that if she waited much longer, Baxis would take the throne. So, she claimed it first and sent Baxis on a diplomatic mission to Gendishin. She did not return. Since then, Talia's house has been in decline. There are now three others of nearly equal influence. You have already met them. They escorted you from the docks.
Raylan said,
You're saying that the four women who are most likely to claim the throne from Queen Ericiel are her closest advisors?
Nyala smiled again.
Oh, I doubt they do much advising, or that the queen has any interest in what they have to say. I believe your kingdom has the phrase as well, keep your enemies close. Ericiel has always been daring. She keeps one guessing. She has plans within plans. Even the slightest move against her could have disastrous consequences. She has been very generous with her advisors. To have four high houses of nearly equal strength is unheard of, and a sure way for her to keep her head.
So, none of them are strong enough to challenge her?
Raylan said with a giddy grin. Dark Tidings said, You do not seek the throne, Matrianera Nyala. Nyala again appeared startled, as if noticing him for the first time. She laughed and said,
No, the path to the throne leads to an early death. I would prefer to see my daughters grown. Still, I have been named a contender for the sixth echelon. It is a nice province, distant, but peaceful.
Raylan bounced on her toes.
Congratulations!
She looked at Isaria and Nanasi, who were standing to either side of her, and said,
This is so exciting!
Frisha, who hovered beside Rezkin, behind them, mumbled,
I don't see what's so exciting about killing each other for positions of power.
Raylan rounded on her.
They're women, Frisha. Women with power. And not all of us are handed the chance to become queen.
Well, not all of us want it,
Frisha snapped. A haunting melody echoed through the hall as the musicians began to play, and Nyala smiled happily as she turned to watch her consort. She called over her shoulder,
The queen has arrived.
On cue, several royal guardsmen entered the hall from the end opposite them. A woman in her mid-30s followed, wearing a gown made entirely of cream-colored feathers tied loosely with silk cord. The feathers swayed and floated as she walked, allowing glimpses of the tanned skin underneath. Her golden blonde hair was pulled back so that thick waves of curls flowed behind her. Atop her head was a glittering crown of yellow gold and diamonds, and a long strand of saltwater pearls rested between her barely concealed breasts. She stepped onto a short pedestal at the front of the hall, turned, and waited. The attention turned toward the visitors. Nyala quickly stepped out of the way, retreating with a Lareshi bow. Rezkin whispered a reminder to the women to present themselves. Isaria led the procession, crossing the hall with as much confidence as she could muster, her shawl hanging loosely behind her. She curtsied before the queen and spoke in Ashayan for the sake of her companions.
I am Isaria Rey, Knight of the Realm, Royal Guard of Kyle.
Ericiel's honey-colored gaze lingered on Isaria's features. Finally, she said,
Isaria, daughter of Ienia and niece of Yenis of House Rey.
A wave of whispers passed through the onlookers.
That is correct,
Isaria said with a quick glance around her. Ericiel's gaze traversed the crowd and came to rest on an older woman who bore a pensive expression.
Yenis, your sister's daughter has returned, yet she serves another ruler, a man. She wears the talk of Geraldina.
She turned back to Isaria.
I am told you are given this as a gift by your king.
Yes,
Isaria replied, her voice heavy with caution. Ericiel's voice was firm but casual.
Give it to me.
I cannot, Isaria said. It is enchanted.
If you could,
Ericiel said.
I still would not give it to you. It belongs to me,
Ericiel said.
And if I challenge you for it, would your king serve as your champion?
Her gaze was no longer on Isaria. Her attention rested on Dark Tidings, who remained at the other end of the hall.
I have no need of a champion,
Isaria replied.
But if you want the torque, you will either have to remove my head or convince my king to unclasp it.
Arisio looked down to Isseria.
A man has placed a collar on your neck, and you not only accept it, but fight for it. Dear girl, do you know why he did this to you?
With this necklace?
Because he wants me to know he can. He takes a strong woman, a knight, a future Matrianera of House Rey, and chains her.
With all due respect, Queen Arisiel, you misunderstand. I placed the collar on my own neck when I chose to swore fealty to him. It is his prerogative.
Arisiel's expression changed, and she smiled with pleasure.
No, I understand.
She waved a hand around the crowd.
Almost any of these women would wear that torque if he presented it to them. That torque that comes either with the blessing of the Adonoro or the strength of one who took it from them, also bears the weight of the untouchable king's tournament champion, the rebel king of Ashai, he who claims the princess of Chaneria, a warrior who defeats a Gendishin army and is brazen enough to demand payment from its king. That torque on your neck, in this hall, means he is at your call. You may not need a champion daughter of Rey, but he is yours nonetheless.
Her gaze roved the faces again.
Every woman in here knows this. He knows this. It was well played.
She captured Isseria's gaze and said,
If you intend to stay in Lanlarej, I would kill you now, lest you steal my throne.
To Yennis, she said,
Do you accept Isseria back into your house?
Yennis, who had earlier appeared so uncertain of the queen's reaction, practically leapt forward. Excitedly, she said,
Yes, Queen Arisiel, my sister's daughter is most welcome in the House of Rey.
Arisiel nodded, obviously having expected it, and said to Yennis,
You may join my council.
Yennis grinned broadly and practically ran to join the sour-faced advisors. Isseria glanced back at her companions and then passed them to Rezkin. He had told her the torque had meaning, but she had not imagined the gift might make her a contender for the throne. She looked down at Frisha, who would not meet her gaze, and then turned back to the queen. Arisiel was watching her carefully, and Isseria had no idea what the woman saw in her. She had the same sharp, endless gaze that Rezkin often wore, the one that seemed to see through everything and everyone at once. The woman said,
You may introduce your companions, Isseria of House Rey.
Isseria stepped aside and said,
This is Mage Nanasi Threl, swordswoman and apprentice healer Raelyn DeVos, and Lady Frisha Markham.
The woman's senses zeroed in on Frisha.
Markham, as in relation to the Ashayan General Markham?
Frisha gripped her filmy shawl tight to her shoulders and said,
Yes, I am his heir.
With what interesting company your king travels,
the woman mused.
Who is the boy?
She said with a nod. Nanasi quickly said,
That is journeyman Mage Wesson.
You are his tutor?
Arisiel said.
Sometimes, I suppose,
Nanasi said uncertainly. They had been instructed not to lie, since there were truth-seekers present, but to downplay Wesson's role where they could.
Explain,
said the queen. Nanasi said,
He did not attend the Mage Academy, so there are some formalities with which he is unfamiliar. I am also assisting him in his pursuits, since he is young and has not yet reached the rank of full mage. He has not been able to achieve his goal of becoming a life mage.
Seemingly satisfied, the queen's attention lifted to the dark wraith at the opposite end of the hall. The others moved out of the way as he strode forward on silent feet. His forward motion ceased at the foot of the pedestal, upon which the queen stood nearly at his eye level. He performed the slightest bow in greeting, but not one that could be mistaken for submission.
Am I to treat with a mask?
She said. Rezkin removed the mask and met her amber stare. Her attempt to conceal her surprise was not lost on him.
So young,
she murmured.
Your name?
As I told your council, I have none.
Impossible,
she said. You should know. Your power has saturated the room since you entered. You are a truth-seeker, are you not?
Yes, yet I sense no power from you.
Her power surrounded him as he met her dispassionate stare. I am not a mage.
What are you?
I am the king of Kyle, true king of Ashai. A spark lit in her honey-colored eyes, and she gazed around the room. Her voice echoed off the walls as she said,
Lonmaresh does not recognize your claim to Kyle until it is recognized by Gendishan, and we do not recognize your claim to Ishai until you wear the crown. You are not granted the immunity due one of royal blood, unless you would like to submit proof of such a claim.
Rezkin said, Any woman who attempts to claim me will end up disappointed and without a champion. Arisio grinned.
We shall see. For now, you will be my personal guest at the table, and we shall dine.
She waved a man forward. He had the bearing of a soldier, but the clean-cut impassivity of a politician.
This is my consort, Serunius. He will serve you.
Rezkin's icy gaze flicked to Serunius. The man did not look pleased. Arisiel observed Serunius's expression and said,
Is there a problem, my love?
The man turned to her with dark eyes, and some unspoken message passed between them. He appeared resigned as he said,
No, my queen.
I understand. Rezkin understood, too. The fact that the queen would have her consort serve him made her intention clear. He said,
You will not get what you want.
She smiled knowingly and said,
You will change your mind.
They spoke no more of it during dinner. Instead, they discussed numerous other subjects, from history to politics to art and culture. At first, Rezkin felt like he was being quizzed by his masters, but he knew what the woman was doing. It was for the same reason that she had listed his accomplishments and emphasized the power behind the gift of the torque. She wanted to impress. She wanted everyone else to know of his superiority. Like the woman, Nyala, with her consort, the queen was bragging. When Rezkin and his companions finally returned to their suite, he was disconcerted.
What is wrong, Rezkin? Said Frisha.
He glanced at her and then went back to checking for traps and poisons.
The queen intends to claim me.
What? No!
She blurted.
I mean, she can't do that, can she? You're a king. She can't claim a king.
She does not recognize me as an independent monarch. We are in her country, and she may do as she pleases.
Frisha said.
But you don't have to accept her. It's not like she can force you.
She can. She has the entire army of Lonmaresh at her disposal, and I cannot possibly escape with all of you in tow. Plus, we would leave without Oladia.
Frisha's anger and frustration seemed to get the better of her as she said,
You don't need her daughter. You don't need King Privet's recognition. You said before that we can just keep Kyle. It's enchanted. No one can force us from it.
Rezkin said, No. They likely cannot make us leave, but they can besiege us. You are all expecting me to take back Ishai, and darker forces are in play. I cannot prevail without allies and trading partners. Still, you are correct. I do not have to accept her claim if I beat her champion. Only a woman can challenge her claim, though.
Well, I can-
No.
Why not?
Frisha said. You are not the Reshi. The only way she would recognize your claim is if you were my wife, which means you would have to marry me.
Frisha seemed at a loss for words, and he shook his head.
We are not doing that, Frisha. You made your decision after much deliberation. You will not change your mind in a moment of perceived duress.
Raylan, who had been watching the interplay with rapt attention, said,
Isaria is Lareshi, so she wouldn't have to marry you, right?
Rezkin glanced at Isaria, who flushed deep red.
Isaria is my ward, he said, as he crossed the room to inspect the fireplace.
Yeah, but it wouldn't have to be a big deal, said Raylan. She claims you as her consort, but it's not like anything has to come of it.
It doesn't work that way,
Isaria mumbled.
If it were so easy to claim a consort who can serve as your champion, don't you think all women would go around claiming everyone?
What do you mean?
Said Raylan. Rezkin pulled his head from the chimney and said,
For Isaria's claim to counter the queen's, I would have to accept it. If I accept the claim, the union must be consummated. In front of witnesses.
That's barbaric!
Exclaimed Frisha.
Rezkin said, The Lareshi are much freer with their lovemaking.
He then crawled onto the floor and slid halfway under a sofa to examine the underside. Nanasi bent over to look at him as she said,
You think the queen intends to force a claim on you?
No,
he replied, sliding from beneath the furniture. He stood and frowned when he looked down at himself. She is confident that I will change my mind. In fact, she is so confident that she is giving her opponents time to scheme and present their own challenges. She believes I will accept her claim and choose to fight as her champion against any challengers. I have no idea what she intends to hold over me.
Us, maybe?
Frisha said, worrying at her lip.
Do you think she would hurt us or hold us hostage?
It is possible, but she is conniving. Threatening you would serve no purpose besides changing my mind, and that would alienate me in the process. I would guess she has bigger plans. Now covered in soot and dust, and frustrated with his lack of insight, Rezkin no longer wished to continue the conversation. He excused himself to bathe with instructions that none of them were to leave the suite. Just as Rezkin closed himself into the bathing chamber, a timid knock sounded at the door. Wesson opened it to admit Selyse, and then took a seat on a chair in the corner, hoping to go unnoticed.
Lady Isaria?
Selyse said.
I am in the middle.
They all looked at the woman, waiting for her to say more. Selyse looked at the curious faces and said,
I am in the middle?
When they did not respond, she said,
There is a man. I speak with you, and I'm in the middle.
Still, they were puzzled, so she tried.
The man, wishes to be with you, and I am in the middle.
After not receiving the response she had expected, she sighed and switched to Lareshi. Isaria said,
Oh, she's acting as an intermediary.
Selyse nodded and said,
Your Matrianera would to be intermediary, but he asks me. I know the men.
Isaria nervously fingered the hilt of her sword.
You're saying that a man wants me to claim him?
Yes, Lady Isaria. This man wants to be claim of you.
No, Isaria started.
Wait, Isaria,
Nanasi said.
You should at least hear about this man. He might be the love of your life. Can you imagine having a man totally devoted to you?
Yes,
Isaria hissed.
I almost had one,
Nanasi said.
I am truly sorry about that, but you should at least hear her out.
Isaria said,
Fine. What about this man?
She had attempted to soothe the acid from her tone, but she was not sure she had succeeded. Selyse smiled.
His name is Coledon. He's handsome. He is good swordman, very large man and strong. He is royal guard. He's good choice for consort. My mother, she won't for me claim him?
But you haven't,
Raylan said suspiciously. Selyse looked embarrassed.
No, I have not claim.
Why not? Frisha said.
My mother, she want warrior man for me. Big man. Guard to be champion for me to be higher, but big mans are, I am afraid.
Frisha said.
I thought the Reshi men were all good to their women.
Yes, yes, are good, but warriors are dangerous. They have a look. They want, desire. Some say they can be rough. Some Matria like this. I do not like this.
She looked quickly to Isaria.
But this man is good, and you are strong. You are warrior. You are not afraid, and he is desired by many.
Raylan said,
If he is so desired, why hasn't he been claimed?
His Matrianera, his sister, will not let him go. He is great champion. She does not want to lose.
She turned to Isaria and nodded toward the bathing chamber where Rezkin could be seen soaking in the bath through the stained glass windows.
If you claim Coledon, she will not risk her consort to challenge claim.
Isaria crossed her arms.
So this Coledon does not have any interest in me. He just wants to get away from his sister.
Selyse shook her head.
No, you are beautiful and strong. You not give to queen as she wants. Coledon likes this.
I have no interest in claiming anyone,
Isaria said.
Besides, I've accepted my king as my guardian. That means he must approve of anyone I marry.
You give him this power?
Selyse said, obviously bewildered.
Your king does wish to marry you?
No,
she said, shaking her head emphatically. She glanced at Frisha's bitter expression and, less certainly, said,
I don't think so. I don't know.
Selyse stared at the torque around Isaria's neck and gave her a doubtful look. Isaria balled her fists and tried to keep her voice low as she pointed at Frisha and exclaimed,
He was supposed to marry her.
Selyse glanced between them and then finally turned to Isaria.
You will speak with Coledon?
No, Isaria said. I'm not claiming anyone.
Selyse appeared crestfallen. She nodded and turned toward the door, thanking Wesson as he hopped up to open it for her. When he turned back around, he paused and said,
"Where is Reskin?"
The ladies turned to peer through the stained glass, but Reskin was gone. Reskin clung to the stones on the parapet as the wind whipped around him. Most of the shutters were locked tight against the approaching storm, and the wall patrol was having a difficult time keeping the torches lit. He climbed over the barrier of the walkway just as the first drops threatened to make the walls too slippery to climb. The door stood open, and Reskin wrapped his cloak around him tightly as he stomped into the guardhouse, turning and shaking as he went, sure to keep his face hidden as he made his presence obvious. The guards paid him no attention as they waxed and oiled their supplies, continuing with their banter and complaints about the turning weather.
"It's starting already, is it?"
the one with a long mustache muttered.
"Can't get a dry night, can we?"
"The foreigners brought it with them," said a younger man.
"Bah, that's a load and you know it. It's been raining for more than a week and they just got here."
"Don't mean they didn't bring it. It's an omen," said the younger.
"It is not an omen, you idiot. It's called the changing of the seasons. Happens every year, or are you too green to remember? Mayhap you were still suckling your mother's teat last year, eh?"
"I'm just saying, there's a king in the palace. You know that's an ill portent."
"Queen says he's not a king. It don't count."
"Yeah, well, I hear things go wrong everywhere this one goes. He took the Chenarian princess, and now they're in a civil war. The latest is there's trouble in Geria, too."
"He hasn't even been to Geria," said the older man. "At least not that I've heard."
The young man shrugged. "They're saying it's his fault anyway. And you heard about the talk? He's been to Celia Donnero, which means he's been to Pharrell."
"I haven't heard of no trouble there."
"If he's in league with the Adonaro, there's trouble. Now Gendishin seems to think they're fulfilling that old prophecy. But the purifiers are saying he's not human, and he's got a mighty powerful mage with him."
"The woman? Mage Thren. She's a pretty one." "I wouldn't mind being claimed by her," said the older man.
"No, I heard it was a man. A battle mage."
The older man chuckled.
"Must be one scary bastard to have the purifiers shaking in their boots."
The men went on to discuss less interesting gossip, and Reskin left the guardhouse, entering the palace wing typically reserved for visiting officials. After slipping from the bathhouse via a secret passage he had found behind the water fixtures, he had slinked through the palace to the barracks where he had hoped to procure a uniform. The building was crawling with people who obviously knew each other and would have noticed a newcomer. One particularly intoxicated guard, who had apparently thoroughly enjoyed the feast, had the misfortune to require the use of the outhouse. Reskin shot him with a blow dart laced with a toxin that would induce sleep for several hours. He was taller than the other man, but most people were too preoccupied to notice an ill-fitting uniform. He watched the maids carrying trays to and from the rooms to determine the location of his target, and then rapped on the Chenarian ambassador's door. The ambassador's aide answered and admitted him without question.
"He is not here," the aide said as Reskin surveyed the suite. "He enjoys taking advantage of the benefits of Lonaresh. He rarely spends time here."
"It was my understanding that ambassadors to Lonaresh must be married to prevent a conflict of interest," Reskin said. The man said,
"They are. Most of the Lareshi do not care, though, so neither does he."
After latching the door, the aide warded the room to prevent eavesdropping. He approached Reskin, saluted, and bowed.
"Your Majesty, it is my honor to serve you. Please tell me I am to be recalled."
"You do not care for your assignment, Striker Akris."
"Your Majesty, I will serve in whatever way is required, but this assignment was supposed to last no more than 8 months. Baldrin sent me here nearly 3 years ago. I began to worry that I was forgotten."
Reskin nodded.
"It is possible. I cannot say."
He made sure he had Akris's attention and said,
"I am not Cadian."
Akris peered at him pensively. The man was on the leaner side for a striker, making him appear less formidable. He had the dark, wavy hair and eyes more common to Chenaria. Even now he spoke Ashayan with a Chenarian accent, probably out of habit. Finally, the striker said,
"I know you are not Cadian."
"And you know that I am his rival," Reskin said.
"If you serve him, then you are obligated to attempt to kill or capture me." "I do not know Cadian well. Since I spent little time in the palace, I only met him briefly, on a few occasions when he was younger. Everyone who has ever spoken of him claims him to be insane. With each piece of news that reaches my ears, I am more convinced these are not rumors politically motivated by his opponents.
And what have you heard of me? Rezkin said.
Some call you a rebel. Others say you are the rightful king. I heard that two strikers have sworn fealty to you already. Apparently they did so after you took the entire tournament without so much as a scratch. Some say you killed Prince Thresen, while others say you kidnapped or rescued him. Most reports agree that you are holding the Wellenven heir hostage, along with a few others. From there, the rumors become increasingly unbelievable. I have heard that you are a powerful battle mage who fixed the tournament and then tried to destroy everyone when they would not give you the prize. They say you stole the bride of Prince Nyan of Geria. I have even heard that you are a demon who wields a black blade forged in the Hells.
Your rumors are surprisingly thorough, yet only salted with truth, Rezkin said.
As I thought.
The man glanced down to the hilt at Rezkin's waist and said,
Is that it? Is that the so-called black blade?
Rezkin frowned.
This? No, this is not mine. It belongs to the man from whom I borrow this uniform. It will kill, should the need arise.
Of course, Akris replied.
So, are you here to recruit me, kill me, or just seeking information?
Rezkin said, Do you want to be recruited?
I heard you carry proof of your claim. I am willing to see it, if you are willing to share.
Akris read the paper Rezkin proffered. Without looking up, he said,
I wish to go home to my wife.
Rezkin said, No one in my company will soon be returning to Ashai. In addition, the families of those known to be in my company are slated for imprisonment or death. Cadian is not a friend to the strikers, though. If they do not slough their honorable ways to do his dirty work, he will treat them the same as any enemy. You are an absent striker, yet to make your loyalty known. When he hears of my visit, he may consider you to be an important player. He may have already contacted you.
The tingle of power filled the air, and Akris said,
I swear by mage oath that I have had no contact with Cadian, his agents, or any other strikers since I took this assignment.
And yet you could be acting on your own accord, satisfying your duty to report to your king, or carry out his decree regarding my capture. You are an unknown factor.
But you made contact anyway,
Akris said. I am not afraid of the unknown. I recognize that if you choose to serve me, it might end in betrayal. It will not stop me from using you in the meantime. Be assured that I make contingencies for such events, and your efforts will fail.
Akris appeared skeptical.
Even a failed betrayal can do much damage.
Rezkin shrugged without concern.
The final result is what matters. So you do not care who gets hurt in the process?
No one is indispensable, Rezkin said with a trifling discomfort in the back of his mind. Upon noticing Akris's displeasure, he felt it prudent to amend his statement.
My concern extends only insofar as my duty to those I must protect and honor. I have taken responsibility for many people, and I am seeking responsibility for more, including all of Ashai. I would prefer for few to suffer, but war is generally not accommodating.
Akris acknowledged Rezkin's statement with a solemn nod.
You assume the ideology of a striker, duty above sentiment. It is a paramount quality in a soldier, but I am not sure it is best in a king.
Rezkin said,
The qualities of a king are irrelevant so long as he is born first and to the right parents. Yes, I see your point, but I'm still bound by oath to serve the king of Ashai.
Then you should decide who you recognize as king. Your position here is valuable because you can spy on both Chanaria and Lun-Laresh, but the truth is, I do not need you. My network spreads quickly, and I already have agents to feed me information.
Rezkin told the lie with confidence, but it was worth the surprise and suspicion in the striker's eyes. Whether he ended up serving Rezkin or Cadian, it was to Rezkin's advantage for the striker to believe he had more than he did. Akris returned his gaze to the parchment, his expression one of intense contemplation. The man had made a mistake in revealing his weakness, his desire to return to a wife they both knew could already be dead. Rezkin thought it a sentiment unbecoming of a striker, though. It stunk of a desperation he doubted the man felt.
He might truly be desperate for liberation, but for some reason other than the one he stated, probably boredom. For a striker, 3 years of serving as an ambassador's aide in a non-hostile queendom would be akin to torture. Or he might be trying to gain his way into Rezkin's company by appealing to Rezkin's ability to empathize, in which case he had not only failed, but revealed that he had no idea with whom he was dealing. Rezkin interrupted the man's internal struggle.
You do not have to decide now. If you wish to serve me, report to the strikers on my ship before we leave.
They're here? Shazar and Rorik?
Shazar is here, Rezkin replied. Shazar and Rorik had sworn fealty to him in front of everyone at the tournament, so it was not a surprise that their names were known. It was interesting that Akris had intercepted such detailed reports, however.
Then you have more than two?
Akris said, failing to conceal his surprise. Rezkin grinned, but did not offer more. Instead, he said,
The only information I desire from you at the moment is what you know about Arisiel's plans regarding me.
Akris shook his head.
I'm afraid I have nothing to offer on that front. The woman is fanatically independent. She tells no one of her plans, especially the important ones. I doubt she even confides in her consort.
What of him? Rezkin asked.
Serunius has been with Arisiel for many years. He is intelligent enough to challenge her, but smart enough not to. He is fiercely loyal and protective, and he is the father of Oledia and their two sons. I think he is truly in love with Arisiel, although I know not if she returns the sentiment. Her callousness has allowed her to hold the throne for this long, and he had no small part in helping her to gain it. He is a master of several weapons, including the sword, and a natural battle mage. In short, he is the most desired champion in the queendom, thus far capable of meeting any challenge. At least until you arrived, and she has made her interest in you obvious. She has declared you fair game and given her opponents time to scheme. I expect blood to be spilled. If you are not careful, it will be yours.
My blood does not run so freely, Rezkin said.
Every man's blood runs like water when his guts are laid open, with or without a crown on his head.
Then I best keep my guts intact,
Rezkin said as he held his hand out for his document. Once it was secured, he said,
I intend to liberate Ashai from Cadian and make it a peaceful, prosperous kingdom where my people will be safe. You may choose whichever side you prefer, but know that the actions you take thereafter are by your choice and not the mere fulfillment of your oath.
Rezkin left the ambassador's suite, taking a different route on the return trip. It had started raining heavily, and he would not be able to scale the slippery walls. As he neared his next turn, he saw something curious. A young woman was scurrying down the opposite corridor when a masculine arm reached out from a doorway and yanked her into a room. Although she was out of sight, Rezkin heard a muffled squeal and the scuff of soft shoes across the floorboards. He might have stayed out of the mess if this did not happen to be the woman who had been assisting his companions. There was a good chance that Selyse's abduction had something to do with him. He slinked silently toward the room and hovered beside the doorway. A quick glance revealed the entrance to a supply room. A hulking man in a guard's uniform towered over the petite woman. He held Selyse against the shelves with one hand, pressing against her chest, while his other clasped an illuminated mage stone.
You do not have permission to touch me,
Selyse said.
I will report you.
I think you won't,
the man said as he inhaled the scent at her neck, the blonde whiskers of his beard scraping across her skin.
You like it.
Rezkin pulled back as she turned her head toward him, even though her eyes were shut, as if she did not wish to see her assailant up close. Her voice wavered as she said,
What do you want, Morlin?
I want you, Selyse. Why will you not claim me?
You are a brute, she snapped. You take liberties and you smell horrible.
Morlin chuckled.
If you truly don't want me, why have you not reported me?
You know why. Your Matrianera has even less honor than you. If I report you, she will challenge me, and I will be forced to choose a champion.
And you have not, so I know you are not serious. You want me. Admit it already.
No, I do not want you. With my position, no one will act as my champion without a claim. I will not allow your disgusting ways to force me into making a claim I do not want.
Anger filled Moreland's tone as he said,
There is a reason no one would be your champion without a claim. You selfishly hoard the power of your position when you should be sharing it with a consort.
And you want me to choose you? That will never happen, Merlin. When I do finally choose one, I would be sure to send him your way.
Merlin laughed. Then you will be sending him to his death, for I will not hold back, no matter the terms of the duel. In fact, I will take out anyone you claim. You will be mine, sillies.
Realizing the confrontation had nothing to do with him, Rezkin was once again faced with a conundrum. Logically, he should walk away. Getting involved would only cause him unnecessary problems, and he could not foresee any benefits. Selys was Ro, though. He had told Frisia that he had found some value in the Ro, and it was true. Without the Ro, he had nothing to protect, which meant he had no purpose. But unlike the Adana Ro, he was not committed to protecting all the Ro. He had only to protect his friends. Selys was not his friend. He started to walk away when the man grunted in pain. Next, he heard a slap and then Selys's pained cry, followed by a sob. Rezkin mentally groaned. Selys could not protect herself against the trained soldier who was twice her weight. Frisia would be angry with him if he did not help. If he wanted to honor Frisia, he had to help Selys. Rezkin drew the soldier's sword at his hip, rounded the corner, and thrust the blade through the man's side. Merlin froze with his hands around Selys's neck. He looked down in shocked confusion and then turned his gaze on Rezkin. If Merlin had been breathing, he might have drawn in a few before he finally recognized the face behind the stolen uniform. Rezkin withdrew the sword slowly. Blood spilled from the wound as the man slumped to the ground with one final wheezing breath. The mage stone winked out, leaving the cupboard in shadowed darkness. Rezkin picked up the stone and focused so that it glowed again. Selys choked and coughed as she struggled for air. Her lashes batted frantically over her wide, frightened eyes. As she pulled in steadier breaths, she stared at the pooling blood and the dead man's stare. She had not yet looked his way, and Rezkin knew he could disappear before she recognized him. Still, he waited, uncertain as to why. Blinking away tears, she stared only so far as his uniform at first.
"You killed him," she gasped.
He responded to her in Lareshi.
"Yes, he was trying to kill you."
She shook her head.
"No, he would not have killed me."
She finally looked up to his face and then rocked back in surprise.
Rezkin said, "I cannot be seen in this uniform. You will wait a mark and then report the incident."
She shook her head emphatically.
"No! They will think I killed him. His Maitreya and Nara will blame me."
"You will tell them the truth. Tell them that I killed him. When they question me, I will confirm it."
"You would do that for me?"
Rezkin frowned.
"It is the truth. Just do not mention the uniform," he said, patting his chest.
She seemed momentarily relieved, but then began crying.
"No, it will not matter. Maitreya and Nara the Feli will find a way to blame it on me. She will say that it was a scheme, that I encouraged and then betrayed him or some such. Can we not hide him? We can pretend this did not happen."
Rezkin raised a brow.
"I could dispose of the body, but the truth seekers will eventually figure out that you had something to do with it. By then, I will be gone, and there will be no one to corroborate your story."
The young woman sobbed.
"Oh, what am I to do? You should not have killed him."
"You need not concern yourself. I will serve as your champion should someone challenge you over this."
"You?"
she exclaimed, and then narrowed her eyes at him.
"What do you ask in return?"
Rezkin shook his head.
"Only that you do not try to claim me."
Her eyes widened.
"Oh, no! I would never! No, no, no! I have no intention of angering Queen Erisil."
Again, the suspicion entered her gaze, and she said,
"Are you doing this to gain her favor? Because it will not work. She cares nothing for me."
Rezkin tilted his head.
"You are a member of Erisil's house?"
Selys shrugged.
"It does not surprise me that you do not know. I am grateful that I am accepted as a member of her house, but she does not claim me otherwise. I am her eldest daughter. Her mother forced her to make a claim when she was only 15, and she hated the man. Serenius is not my father. That is why she does not like me."
Queen Aristiel says that Aladia is her only true daughter.
She makes you call her queen?
I'm just another servant in her house. She will not allow Cerunius or any other member of the house to stand as a champion for me if I'm challenged. Not unless the goal of the challenge is to damage the house standing. This,
she waved at the body on the floor,
she will blame on me. Even if she presented a champion on my behalf to preserve the house's honor, she would still expel me. But if you stand for me, I do not know.
Do you know what her plans are for me?
It seems obvious that she intends to claim you, but the queen would never speak to me, much less confide in me.
Why did Murlan think you had a position of power? Rezkin said. She looked at him pensively.
Some people think Queen Aristia loves me, and that she only pretends otherwise in public to protect me. Some think she's trying to distance me from the house so that if she's killed, I might be spared. Others believe that she wants her enemies to think I hate her so that they will try to gain my confidence and assistance in overthrowing her. None of it is true. But their beliefs, and the fact that I'm still a member of her house, mean that I am in a higher position of power, even though I'm only a servant.
Yes, people's perceptions are often more powerful than the truth, Rezkin mused. You could take advantage of those perceptions and declare your own house. Her face scrunched with worry.
Yes, but I would have to claim a consort for champion.
She glanced down.
Someone like him.
Rezkin shook his head, knowing the guard from whom he borrowed the uniform might wake before he was able to return it and avoid suspicion. I am out of time. Report this in a Candlemark, and I will stand as champion.
Okay, but how do I know you will follow through?
She said. You will just have to trust me. Even as he said it, he knew it was much to ask of any Lareshi. A heavy knock sounded at the door. Wesson approached with confusion. It was not the soft, hesitant knock of the servant woman, Selyse. Queen's consort Cerunius and several guards stood beyond the portal, and he looked as if he would be all too pleased to dispense with them all. He did not even glance at Wesson as he pushed his way into the sitting room.
We are here for your master, he said. I believe some call him Rezkin.
Wesson shook his head slowly, glancing at Isaria and Nanasi, who had come out of their rooms to investigate. Trisha and Raylan followed, all looking equally concerned. Wesson said,
he is not exactly here, I believe.
He drew out the words, stalling for a few extra seconds to think. Cerunius rounded on him, and Wesson understood what the Queen of Lanlaresh saw in the man. He was a lion prepared to rip into his enemies, and he held himself with the confidence of a man who could. The journeyman means to say that I was in my private bedchamber, Rezkin said from the doorway. There is no need to intimidate the young man. He is only doing as I asked. Cerunius glanced at Wesson with a viper's gaze. It is not difficult to intimidate a mouse. He at best hope he grows into some real power, or he will never be claimed.
Isaria straightened her spine and sauntered over to stand between Cerunius and Wesson.
It is fortunate for the journeyman that our ways are different from yours.
Wesson knew that Isaria was trying to do him a favor by redirecting the man's attention, but the constant belittlement was causing his generally well-controlled anger to simmer hotter. He inhaled deeply to calm himself, and then returned to the chair in the corner where he might go unnoticed. The distraction worked. Cerunius perused Isaria's figure and said,
You, my lady, you could claim any man you want.
Isaria smiled sassily and placed her hand on her hip.
Any man.
Wesson wanted to laugh. Raylan had been working with Isaria on developing some skills in flirtation all afternoon, but it was comical since he knew how uncomfortable Isaria was with performing the act. Cerunius's expression became stormy, and he returned to Rezkin.
You are summoned to the court. There has been some trouble, and you have been named a person of interest.
Rezkin smiled jovially and said, Of course. I would be glad to assist with your investigation in any way I can. Cerunius appeared thrown by the change in Rezkin's demeanor. By the man's tense stance and the number of guards he had brought, Wesson thought he had expected trouble. Wesson had no doubt that, no matter what had happened, Rezkin was involved. The queen's consort glanced at the others and said,
Your people will attend as well.
We may have questions for them.
Rezkin clapped his hands and rubbed them together with enthusiasm. He strode over and threw his arms around Isaria and Frisch's shoulders. He said,
Excellent. Let us all go. It will be interesting to see your proceedings. None of us have been to a Lareshi court. Tell me, are they usually conducted at this late hour?